Significant Business Results Radio features concise and compelling interviews with entrepreneurs and business leaders. Listen as they identify factors that drive innovation and measure significant business results. Be inspired and influenced by their insights and outcomes. Hosted by Fran McNeil, President of Significant Business Results, LLC.
Well, welcome to Significant Business Results Radio. I'm your host, Fran McNeil, and joining me in the studio this evening are two gentlemen that have collaborated in creating the official leadership checklist and diary for project management professionals, which can be found at www.leadershipchecklist.com. So who is in the studio with me this evening? Well, the first gentleman is Earl Cobb. He's a project manager and retired technology executive. His background includes senior leadership positions with Honeywell, Motorola, Reynolds & Reynolds, and Wells Fargo Bank. He's the author of Focused Leadership and The Leadership Advantage. Earl's a graduate of Tennessee State University and Arizona State University. He currently resides in Phoenix, Arizona. So, Earl, welcome to Significant Business Results. How are you this evening?
I am just wonderful, and it's a real pleasure to be here with you today, Fran.
Oh, my pleasure indeed. And, Earl, you have been a guest on the radio show before, so I am glad that you're back. And this time you brought your collaborator. Often your collaborator is your wife, so I think it's really kind of cool that you have collaborated with Jim Grigsby, and I'll share a little bit about him and welcome him on the show. So Earl and Jim have collaborated on this project called the Official Leadership Checklist and Diary for Project Management Professionals. And Jim Grigsby is a project manager and the president and CEO of Jim Grigsby Consulting, where he provides revenue cycle solutions through analysis and training. He's the author of, and I always smile when I see this title, Don't Tick Off the Gators, and Are You Surrounded by Jerks? Jim is a graduate of Western Michigan University and resides in South Florida. Jim, welcome to Significant Business Results Radio Show. How are you this evening?
Thank you, Fran. I'm doing well, and I hope you're doing well.
I am. It's very exciting to have both of you on the show. So I've given our listeners a little bit of your background, and they may not really know about your path to entrepreneurship. And so, Earl, although you've been on the show before, I'd love for you to kind of walk people through what was the significant story behind you becoming an entrepreneur. Take it away.
Well, sure. You know, I think the itch, if you will, in terms of wanting to do those types of things that entrepreneurs do, that is, come up with ideas, have the vision to implement those ideas, have the tenacity and get the energy out of seeing that idea come to fruition, really was planted early in my life by my father. Artis Cobb Sr., had no formal education. He raised 8 kids, including myself. I've got 4 sisters and 3 brothers in a small 3-room house in South Georgia where I grew up in the late 50s and 60s. But one thing that we all got from Dad was that you can make things happen if you spend the time to understand what you're doing and to be good at what you enjoy doing. My dad was a carpenter. My dad was a painter. On the weekends, my dad was a barber. Okay. And wow. I have these I have these stories, particularly my sisters still remind me of, because, you know, from I can remember 5-6 years old, I've always had this thing of wanting to be busy, you know. So during the summer breaks, I remember vividly, 7-8 years old, I don't recall, I used to always make something in the summer, a go-kart or something. I'm always in the back with the building and with a saw and a hammer and building something. I remember I used to wait for my dad to before he leaves, go into his toolbox and get the little tools that I need, you know, to build whatever I'm building that day. And I'd just be back there hammering and screwing. And at lunchtime, Dad would come home, and he'll come outside. He said, Earl? I said, yes, sir. Can I have my hammer back now? So
and you didn't charge him
now,
for it?
And, no, not at all. Not at all. And really, you know, so, you know, between that and 34 years of, well, really 40 years of becoming an electrical engineer and getting involved in, you know, corporate life as a young engineer and young project manager with Honeywell, back when Honeywell was going to be the second largest mainframe computer manufacturer behind IBM back in those days, and you know, and getting my senses, if you will, about how to use your engineering talents to not just only build computers or build components, but also how to build teams, and it sort of evolved that way. And certainly the last 15 years of my career, I was fortunate enough to be a senior executive in three wonderful organizations and had a lot of good teams and was able to not only develop the kinds of skills that I need to run large organizations, but also to understand more clearly how to apply those in entrepreneurial types of endeavors.
Wow, what a rich background. And I love the really personal side with your father and this image of a young boy, you know, hammering and putting together summer projects. That's so cool. You know, and the idea of being busy and yet being productive and creating something that people can use. So fascinating story.
Yep. Absolutely, and even today, Fran, to build on that, is, you know, my wife, you know, I retired a few years ago, and my wife said, "Geez, can't you just stop doing something?" No, I can't stop doing stuff.
And you're like, "Wait a minute, there's a whole, you know, there's a lot of years behind this behavior." That's really cool. So thanks for sharing your story. Jim, how about you? What's the significant story behind you being an entrepreneur?
Well, I can't build anything, unlike Earl. I tear things apart.
What a combination.
No, I was in healthcare financial management for years, and every hospital I worked at, we had consultants come in, and they would work on projects, and they would do things, and I'd go to meetings for HFMA and other groups, and they would present. And, you know, the more I was around these people, the more I got fascinated with what they did, and I thought, well, I can do this. And one particular job, I found one of their reports and thought, well, I can write this because this is just what we did. And I kind of kept that in the back of my mind, and finally I was between jobs because I have the four-wall syndrome. I don't do well within the same four walls for a long period of time. And that was one of the things I liked about the consulting and being an entrepreneur, is you have to move around, help different people in different sites, and have an impact on more than just one place at a time. And I was between jobs, and somebody asked me to help out with a project at a cancer center in New Jersey, and I went and did that. And my best friend, Johnny Holland, had his own business, and he helped me get started, told me how to get the licensing and how to market and network, and kind of took off from there. And, you know, I'm like some companies, it's always a straight line to success. I've had ups and downs, but they've taught me how to persevere and how to market and how to work with people and how to understand. And the lessons I've learned about project management, which we mentioned in our book about project leadership and communication. So I think that the big thing about being an entrepreneur is it's not only have I helped other people, but it's helped me grow as a professional and understand the business world and how to deal with different types of people, which is very important when you're trying to manage a project.
Absolutely. I mean, the project is the thing, but what I hear you saying is it's really held together and propelled by the people. How does that connect with the title of, again, I was chuckling as I was sharing with our listeners, the title of your first book about the Gators? What's the connection between entrepreneurship, consulting, and Gators?
Don't Think Off the Gators is about problem solving. It's an irreverent approach to it. But one of the keys is when you're in a swamp surrounded by gators, the first thing you have to do is find your way out, not aggravate the gators or tick off the gators and have them eat you, and you're done. And you have to remember to focus on what you're trying to do, what your mission is, and what you're trying to accomplish, and not get sidetracked by a bad temper or feeling sorry for yourself and getting distracted from your goal. So don't tick off the gators. The idea is to help people focus on getting past obstacles, which occur not only in project management, but just in everyday life, and moving on towards what you're trying to accomplish.
Mm-hmm. And are there, I mean, that's a very, like the image that I have of, trying to get out of a swamp and there's gators, focusing, but your book has a lot of humor. How does focus and humor sort of both work together? Not only in your book, but also in project management and people management.
I think one of the things you have to do to enjoy life and enjoy your work and be successful is to have fun. And sometimes you need a little bit of humor to do that. You can't be a clown all the time, but you need to see that, it's just kind of funny that we're all stuck here in the corner, we're painted in the corner. How do we get out? Do we wait for the paint to dry, or do we try to find a way to tiptoe one person out and find a way in? And I just think that people get too serious about things and they don't stop and think about the success and how to get it done. They're too busy criticizing themselves or criticizing someone else. And they fail to see that, there's a lesson to be learned in it. And sometimes there's a little bit of humor. You might not laugh at it at the time, but looking back, it's a good thing. One example I use is I do know that if your car battery won't start, that breaking your umbrella on the post in the garage is not going to solve that problem, because I did that one.
Mm-hmm.
didn't get the car started.
Well, yes, I can imagine that wasn't part of the owner's manual. So that makes total sense to me. Total sense. Well, Earl, you and Jim are here this evening together because you've collaborated on a project. Earl, how does that collaboration start and end up being a book together, a checklist together?
Yeah, well, friend, the last time I was fortunate enough to be on your talk show here, I had just released my second book on leadership called The Leadership Advantage. Okay.
Right.
And my first book, Focused Leadership, was more of a memoir and sharing my stories and my experiences and my leadership style. And then The Leadership Advantage, which has been picked up by a lot of academia sources, really goes into more of the description of how all of us have some leader in us and some have some leadership attributes greater than others. And the important thing is to find out the relationship between leadership and your strength and how to use that to your advantage. Okay. Mm-hmm. So right after that release, by the way, Jim wrote me a very nice review on that. After that release, my wife and I were still very active in our blog talk show, and we had Jim as a guest because he was an author, and we really enjoyed his humor and his messages, and we had a great time. A lot of calls that night, and I just felt a connection with Jim in some way. Shortly after that, a few months after that, of course, we kept dialoguing, and Jim asked, "Do you have any projects that you might have that you're going to be starting in the future?" And I did have an idea that I was sort of playing around with, but I just couldn't find what I needed to pull it out of me and to take it to that next level. And in dialoguing with Jim and looking at the commonality that we have in terms of our career, my management career started as a program manager. It's program when you're with the government, because it's government programs, projects when you're not non-government, as a program, as a young program manager, okay? And I can clearly connect the advantage I had of being a program manager first, or project manager first, and then moving into senior management, okay, in terms of the trying to control something that you have no direct responsibility or control of. You know, no one directly reports for you. You're in a totally matrix situation. The conditions are such that, you know, you're the one. You're like the coach. If things don't go well, they fire the coach. Okay, they don't fire the team. Mm-hmm. Right? So as we dialogue, we began to think through this idea of, you know, what is it that really contributed to each of our successful careers. It was project management, but then we say, now, was it our degrees? Was it our certifications? You know, was it our technical strength? And as we thought through it, it really turned out that that aha moment came when we both said, no, it's really how we were able to understand leadership and how we were able to develop those leadership skills around the experiences, the observations, the environments that we were in. And that really took something that is not typical in your just engineer or your just manager or your just consultant. You know, so we found out that what we had in common was we sort of have done a lot of things in a lot of different places, and we're these multiplexers who just like to push it all together and find out why things happen. And that's how the idea of the official leadership checklist and diary came about.
Yeah, when Earl and I first started talking about that.
We
really were focusing on communication. Because we both have had projects where communication was poor, or communication died, or communication stopped, or it wasn't two-way. And we realize a lot of times when projects fall apart or fail or run into the quagmire is when the communication is very poor and it's not universal. We talk very quickly about how you need to communicate vertically, horizontally, and across all spectrums with the client, third parties, or with the staff. How important that was, and we really honed in and caught that message together. And I think that, and Earl and I have talked about this before, very few books with collaborators go as well or as quickly as this one, because we didn't try to compete with each other. We didn't try to fight. We tried to mesh our ideas. And, you know, this looks good here. This looks good there. You work on this. You fix this. We didn't spend a lot of time criticizing each other. We just kind of refined the different things. And as Earl said earlier, when you read the book, you can't always tell who wrote what part. Now, there's some that are definitely Earl. There's some that are definitely Jim. But there's a lot that's a combination, because every other paragraph or every third paragraph is done by the other one. In fact, I couldn't even remember who wrote some of them right now if you put a gun to my head. But the thing is that we really felt that strong communication connection and the difference between leadership and management. We talked about that a lot. You know, anybody can manage something because you're just moving pieces around or following a process. But it takes a leader to realize when something's wrong that he or she is responsible for fixing it, and maybe not by themselves, but working with the team. And, you know, we talked about the importance of developing staff, because we both have done a lot of that. And, you know, because we're very outgoing, confident people, we think that one of the key things a project leader must do is be the chief confidence builder. And we spent a lot of time working on that. So there wasn't a lot of difference. It was just taking different ideas and putting them together into the book.
Wow, that's really powerful. And I imagine that if someone were just kind of helicoptering into the interview right now, they want to get a sense of not only what is the title, so I'll repeat that, but also sort of what are the key takeaways. And Jim, I think you're beginning to touch on those. So again, for our listening audience, the title is called The Official Leadership Checklist and Diary for Project Management Professionals. Between the two of you, who is this book on, and what will they most get out of it? What are sort of three key takeaways, if we had to boil it to that, or if you want to reformat that in another way? What's the benefit for them picking up the book and reading it?
Yeah, I'll take a first crack at that. It's hard for us to, after we're finished, in particular working with the number of collaborators that we did before we actually finalized the book for our publisher, we began to realize that calling it a book was really not very descriptive. You know, it's really a platform, and we talk about this in the preface, okay? Mm-hmm. And the reason we call it a platform, okay, is that we believe that the idea of valuing thinking like a leader and what we call tracking like a leader sort of happens at two stages of the quote-unquote project management career path, if you will. The first stage is when you first get there, say the first 3 to 5 years. Now, many people that go and get their PMP, get their certifications or move into project management, normally move there from, you know, accounting or engineering or, you know, some discipline where they've demonstrated their ability to control and numbers and control schedule and control budget. I mean, you know, they come from that direction, okay? And the PMI training, you know, which is provided, you know, the program Book of Knowledge is excellent in terms of the technical and the charting and the measuring and the resource management and the quality and the, you know, the phases of managing a project. But what that doesn't give a young project manager, okay, is this experience of understanding the leadership component, which has a lot to do with experience and interpersonal skills and not just general, but specific. There's certain things about a matrix organization where you are considered the leader, but no one reports to you. Okay. Where you are providing things that goes to various disciplines, and all of these stakeholders, if you will, have different agendas. Okay, so the first group is that young project manager, 3 to 5, 7 years in, who has spent all their time on the technical, getting all the PMIs, the certification and skills, and they find themselves, use one of Jim's terms, in a barrel of alligators about trying to understand how to lead this team. Now, the second one is people that are at another level in terms of they're ready for a change in their career. And, Jim, I'll let you take that one.
Yeah, thank you. And what we're trying to do is take people from manager to leader, help them to identify their strengths and weaknesses, and develop an action plan to improve those strengths and to overcome the weaknesses and become a complete manager so that they can understand that, you know, I'm not just here to get things done. I'm here to accomplish something. I'm here to help develop the younger people on this project so they can take the leadership roles later. And I'm learning to communicate across the board with the client and make sure that things are done correctly and take responsibility and develop people.
And that's an important distinction. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an important distinction. Go ahead, Earl. Mm-hmm.
No, I was going to add to that, along with calling it a platform, we certainly believe that it's a tool, okay, because when the book's only 108 pages, okay, and, mm-hmm. and the book is laid out such that it's in three components, okay. The first components we sort of summarized in terms of what we thought were the priority things that project managers should be thinking about in terms of the leadership aspect of their job. And we ended up calling these the seven habits of successful project leaders. And in the first part of the book, it's about 30 pages, Jim and I go through and build it very succinctly. Now, this is not a novel or a lot of long lessons learned. Mm-hmm. Very succinctly in bullets and specifics, mm-hmm. these seven habits, why they're important, what you gain, what you lose, how to do it in a way, what to look for, and we add, of course, Jim's part of the team, a little humor with that, okay, to try to get them to feel comfortable with them, okay? And then the middle of the book, okay, is the checklist. Now we call it a checklist. It's a list of affirmations, okay, that's built around the five phases, okay, of any project from startup, you know, to project execution through closeout, but it's also built around the pinnacles, if you will, of the habit. That is, if you go through there, you'll see it's about what are these things I should be thinking about as a leader during the startup phase, if you will, relative to communications. What are these things I should be thinking about as a leader during the startup phase relative to quality? What are these things I should be doing as a leader during this project startup, you know, as it relates to making sure I'm prepared to close this project out when it's done? So all of five of those things are thought through for each phase, and we have affirmation, which is really just our experience. These are the things, if we were sitting there with you with our 40 years of experience, we whisper, Fran, you should do this. Fran, you should think about this. Fran, at this phase, you got to make sure you do this. Okay?
That's what we talked to you about, thinking about what you would do differently next time. One of the things we repeat is, what would you do differently next time? In the diary, we get people to think about, reflect on the project they just finished, and get lessons for themselves they can improve in the future.
And that's the third part, Fran. The third part is the diary. And that's also what we characterize as tracking. I remember sitting as a young project manager in the cafeteria with a napkin writing about what I'm going to do that day, right? But when I got a mentor, he told me not only go out and do it, when you go home, think about, did I do that? Okay? How well did I do? Okay, and that's what the diary is. It tracks, it maps the phases, it maps the five functional areas and get you to think about, did I really do that? And we believe what we call the secret weapon, not just your degrees, not just your certifications, but to get yourself in a mindset of thinking like a leader and tracking what you're doing, because it all goes together. If you can't measure it, can't correct it.
Absolutely. Well, it's been a pleasure having both of you on the show. I want to make sure that folks know they can go to www.leadershipchecklist.com to get more information. Folks can actually, when they go to the website, provide a little bit of information and get a complimentary PDF copy of the latest checklist, as well as find out more information about additional programs that both of you offer. So thanks again, Earl Cobb and Jim Grigsby, for being on the show and sharing a little bit about the platform and the tools of the official Leadership Checklist and Diary for Project Management Professionals.
Thank you, Fran.
Hope you have a great evening.
Thanks for having us, Fran.
Sure. Thank you.
Betcha. You
Thank
too.
You. Thanks. My pleasure.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Okay. Thank you. Bye. So, folks, please go out and check out www.leadershipchecklist.com and continue to listen to Significant Business Results Radio Show.
Significant Business Results Radio features concise and compelling interviews with entrepreneurs and business leaders, hosted by Fran McNeil, President of Significant Business Results, LLC. Follow Significant Business Results Radio on blogtalkradio.com/significantbusinessresults.